This was a very interesting case. This week it was reported that an Arizona woman went to bed with a migraine headache. She had never been out of the country before, and she woke up with a British accent. This rare syndrome is called foreign accent syndrome, and it's of real interest to linguists across the country. Joining us tonight is the world's foremost expert in foreign accent syndrome, linguist Dr. William Katz, a professor of linguistics at University of Texas at Dallas. Okay. Welcome, Dr. Katz. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Chicago. So tell our listeners, what is foreign accent syndrome?
Well, it's an unusual medical condition where patients end up producing disordered speech, but the hallmark is that it sounds foreign. And it's not really foreign, but it strikes listeners not as being slurred or disordered, but foreign.
You know, Doctor, Cash, can we play a little clip from this woman? She spoke out to the media, and I want you to listen, everyone, to her accent.
September 17, 2011 was the first time, and I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, something's really wrong with me, is all I'm thinking. Everyone only sees hears Mary Poppins. Who would do this for attention? I don't know.
So to me, that sounds like an accent, but what is really going on? I know this is a complicated syndrome, but what is going on in the brain that changes a person's speech in this way?
Well, I don't really know this particular case, but there have been about 107 worldwide cases reported that I'm aware of like this. And first of all, the so-called accent, I guess we should call it a pseudo-accent, it's in the ear of the beholder. So what's happening to the individual is, for some reason, typically it'll be something like a stroke or sometimes a migraine or sometimes reasons we don't even know, something causes the speaking system to go awry. The timing gets off and so forth. You might have heard the melody sounds a little funny and the pitch sounds a little funny in that speech. And somehow that constellation of changes hits the ear as sounding foreign. I hope that kind of makes sense.
Sure. Well, and what happens generally with these people? Do they recover or do they consistently talk like that for the rest of their lives?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say in the cases that are out there, the majority don't recover. It's really based on the etiology, that is what caused it. There are cases, however, where there is recovery. I know there's several documented cases of recovery. And, again, it's sort of based on what caused the issue in the first place.
Does this syndrome lead you as a linguist to study other issues? And we're going to have to take a break in a minute, but is this something that we use to study maybe autism and stroke victims who have to learn to speak over again? Does this say something about the brain?
Well, we think so. For those of us who like this kind of thing, it's a kind of an experiment in nature, and we can try to look at those cases where there is a discrete cause, let's say a stroke in a certain part of the brain. There's a part of the brain called the insula where a lot of these cases seem to crop up, so that's interesting to us. Where it's caused by a more general problem, it doesn't really help us in that way, but we can maybe look at the behavior and try to understand something about how people perceive accent. So, yes, it really is kind of helpful to us.
We're talking to Dr. William Katz, professor of linguistics at University of Texas at Dallas, and we're talking about the foreign accent syndrome. When we come back, we're going to be talking to him a little bit about some of the other issues that revolve around the brain and speech. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. It's Karen Conti, and we're talking foreign accent syndrome with Dr. William Katz. Dr. Katz, so this woman goes to sleep. She has a migraine headache. She wakes up with an accent that sounds very similar to a British accent. Apparently, she had this issue before and had awakened with like an Irish brogue and maybe something that sounds Australian in nature. Is it possible that because she heard these accents in a movie somewhere on television, she had never been to these countries, could it be that her brain was imitating that in some way due to some trigger from the migraine? Oh, Dr. Kitts.
There's a couple of cases There's a couple of cases called psychogenic foreign accent syndrome. That is, there are some cases where under kind of mental pressure, people can affect different accents. If people are off their meds, they can have what's called pressured speech and things like that. But in generally, it doesn't sound like it. And usually the experience that people have had don't weigh into this. So you might ask, why do people think it was an Irish brogue one time or British another or Aussie another? It's probably because in the ear of the listener, a lot of the listeners aren't that sophisticated. I'm not trying to be snooty or anything, but it's kind of hard to know those differences. And, you know, depending on where people are, typically these people with FAS are sometimes thought to be Slavic one time, British another time. That's what I meant by saying it's not a real foreign accent. It's a speech motor disorder that masquerades as an accent. So you really can't go to bed, you know, in Chicago as an American one night and wake up Irish the next.
That
should make people feel better.
No matter how much beer you drink.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Doctor, I want to kind of morph this conversation into some of the things that are maybe less rare, and even though they may not be exactly in your area of expertise, but the brain causes your ability to speak. I'm breaking this down as I know it. But how do you study that? You can't watch the brain process language. You have to just watch people who have these different syndromes.
But you can.
Well, tell me.
Better.
Okay.
In the old days, the bad old days of these famous people, Broca and Wernicke, we did something called lesion deficit science, where we would look at a lesion or some part of the brain that was damaged and then the behavior and put two and two together. And kind of like maybe watching the person who wakes up British and saying, where is it in the brain? Which is very good. But nowadays we can even do better. We can do functional MRI scans. We can actually put indwelling electrodes into the brain. So researchers are able to watch language being processed in the brain, in people, in real time.
Oh,
it's absolutely amazing now.
Wow. So let's just talk about children who are autistic. And some children who are autistic cannot speak, and they have, obviously, they have thoughts, and obviously they have desires, and their brain is working. It's just that their brain doesn't let them verbalize. What, I know this is just a simplistic way of explaining it, but simplistically, what happens in the brain? What do we know about this?
Oh, well, now I am getting into waters that I'm not that versed in, but here's what I know. Autism is a developmental disorder, and it was identified, you know, in the 40s. And the main hallmark of it, you're right, there is a communication disorder component to it. That varies among kids. Some of them can be chattier, some of them can be stone silent. But the main issue is a social interaction problem. Not being able to look others in the eye, not being able to get along with other kids. It's a social integration issue. And there's also a behavioral component. So those are the big three. And so there is something going on in the brain. We really don't know what it is. So that's a very active area of research currently.
And again, you know, just
that's kind of all I can say right now.
And if you, even though I know you're not an expert in all of these areas, but dyslexia, what generally happens in the brain when somebody is dyslexic and they're looking and they transpose numbers or transposes letters? What happens? Do we know anything about the cause?
Well, I want to put in a plug for the sort of mother organization that's really important here in the U.S. for this, the American Speech Hearing Association, also known as ASHA, A-S-H-A, ASHA.org, if anybody wants more information, because nowadays dyslexia is kind of considered in a bigger group of language-based learning disabilities. So you're right, these people have special reading problems, so we still know that. But as we've been looking at it, it appears to be part of a broader family of problems that a lot of kids have. Some kids have a little more on the writing side, and many of these reading and writing problems also seem to have a sound-based problem. They're called phonological processing disorders. So things like, you know, making rhymes and picking out rhymes of words, that seems to be a common basis to a lot of it. So actually, some of these things are connected in a bit of an abstract way, but researchers drill down and they specialize in each of these areas in order to really try to help the people with these problems.
No, I understand. They're all probably different, but the connection here to me is the brain and the ability to speak. We only have a few minutes, but I had a father who was a wonderful man. He was a professional comedian, as a matter of fact, and he was extremely verbal, and was a great communicator. And of all horrible things that happened to him, he had a stroke and he lost the ability to speak, which was just horrible. But I found it interesting because he did try to learn to speak again, and no, everyone thinks it comes back to you and you start talking, but it's a whole process of learning how to actually formulate letters and words, and it's very difficult, especially at an older age. But I found it interesting that he still knew his jokes, and he could write them down, but he couldn't verbalize them, which was very frustrating for all of us. What do we know about this syndrome, or whatever we are going to call it, aphasia, I guess it is, from a stroke? What do we know about it?
Oh, yeah, that is my specialty. So
okay, there we go.
I can talk about that, too. Yeah, aphasia is the loss of language in adults after brain damage, and we know a lot about that, and I'm really sorry to hear about your father, and that kind of struggle regaining speech after a stroke has been intensively studied. We're getting better and better at trying to help people. I know there in Chicago there's some, you know, excellent people at the Rehab Institute and
yes,
several great places like that where they work with these folks, and there are wonderful new techniques. Usually working with speech-language pathologists will really help these people along, but it is a struggle. People struggle to come back, and my experience is every person is different. You'll find some amazing islands of preservation, maybe remembering their music, remembering their jokes, and
right,
so forth. But, yeah, it's often a struggle to get language back. Typically, the writing is on par with the spoken language if his brain damage was toward the front of his brain. But, yeah, and it's hard on the families.
It is. But
you lose your sense of yourself when you're, you know, you can't speak anymore. People, unfortunately, the society thinks you're stupid.
That's exactly right, and people would talk around him thinking he didn't understand. But you know what? People still have a quality of life, and it's still worth living, and we enjoyed him to the very end. But Dr. William Katz, I want to thank you so much. Dr. William Katz, Professor of Linguistics at University of Texas at Dallas. If people want to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
They can email me, wkatz@utdallas.edu.
Thank you so much, doctor. Take care.